I made the best fucking boneless chicken wings.
I bet they were worse than B-dubs.
Oh my god, I'm shitting on B-dubs. Like I in Vegas, I'll hook them up for you.
I'm not going to Vegas.
Well, Corbin, you're going to Vegas. Stop.
No, there's proof positive that B-dubs sucks. He's not going to risk it.
Wait, you're not going to Vegas because of your job currently?
Yes.
Okay, well, in the meantime,
we will work on that. Yeah. I will work on making sure that your job's not a problem.
Do you have your boss's phone number?
Right? Yeah, because you've gotten hate mail before, but you've never gotten hate mail written by somebody literate.
Oh, shit.
So I got a feeling.
That's the name of this episode. Oh, shit.
Start the podcast.
We did.
In this episode, the gang decides they're not going to fucking swear anymore after tonight.
Fuck them.
Start the podcast.
We are, Corbin. What do you think we're doing?
No, we're not.
We're almost done.
Yeah.
For an hour.
This is all making it. You don't understand when I start and when I don't start.
Oh, no.
Corbin's genuinely, he's distraught right now.
See, we're doing our best. We're just going to send this podcast to your boss.
Yeah, here we go. You got your resume. We got your portfolio. This is the professionalism of Corbin right here.
Corbin doesn't, you don't have to have a portfolio in Oklahoma.
I know how to use Word and Excel, and they're like, whoa.
I wish that I could, like, disagree with you or argue with you, but Mary Fallon just got reelected, so.
I thought you were going to say, like, turn back time and never meet us, but I'll take that too.
I want to say that we elected a Democratic senator, but I'm pretty sure our terrible Republican governor got reelected. So
I did not vote this year.
What?
I have been so busy lately. I didn't feel informed enough to vote.
I didn't.
If you're not informed, don't vote.
This brought about a new thought.
Leave the judges blank. Vote straight ticket Democrat, and then go. It took me 2 seconds to fill out my ballot.
I mean, sure, but like, I don't feel comfortable.
I don't care about the Kalamazoo school board, but I do care about the fucking governor.
That's what I try and portray to other people is like, don't vote if you don't feel like you're comfortable with what you're voting for. So I feel like I kind of have the same obligation to myself, and I have not.
Yes, that is why Republicans took the Senate, because of that attitude.
No, that's because people voted them in. That's what happened. People voted for medical pot. They voted for a higher minimum wage. They voted for more abortion access, and they voted for Republicans.
I mean, like, I don't know. Part of it was that, but also, it really brought about a new line of thought. Like, I really wish instead of voting yes for a particular candidate, you could just vote no for a particular candidate, and it would just cancel out one of the yes. And, like, I wish that was a thing, because there's plenty of, like, I would have felt informed enough to go in and vote no for certain candidates.
That's fair. That should be an actual option.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't let you do that. And I feel like you would actually get a lot more support from your, like, third parties that where, like, they know their vote doesn't matter one way or the other, but they really have, like, one person they don't want in. So, like, I feel like you'd get a lot of those people who, like, they're like, I'm not going to vote for the other big party.
That would be too fucking confusing, man. People in Florida can't even figure out a paper ballot. You think they're going to figure out, like, oh, use black pen for yes and a blue pen for no. There's no fucking way.
Hey, you could – come on.
People are really stupid.
They can't even figure out a fucking touch screen.
I guess I have a little more faith in humanity. Like, well,
yeah, because you didn't watch the fucking 2000 election coverage.
Yes, I did. I was young, but I watched it.
I was about seven years old.
I was at the restaurant for that 2000 election when they informed us that the lobster that was all you can eat, we could no longer have any more lobster.
That shit. That's worse than a hanging Chad.
This is a true story, actually. We were there because I didn't want to watch the outcome of the elections. And I was with my friend. Actually, I think this is 2004 election. This is the re-election of Obama.
What?
That wasn't the re-election of Obama at all.
Never mind. I'm stopping.
It's 2012, dude.
ten years ago.
Yeah, 2008. I'm sorry. This story is from 2008. Never mind.
Do you mean when Obama was first elected?
Yeah, when he was first elected.
There you go.
I was
you
there.
Didn't want to watch? Like, why didn't you want to watch?
I don't know. It was at the point where I figured he was already going to be elected, and I didn't want to sit there and stress over it. And plus, it was the last day that this one place was having all-you-can-eat, and literally they had all-you-can-eat lobster.
There's the real reason. That's what it was. All-you-can-eat lobster trumped the presidential race.
Yeah, but it was horrible. It was horrible. Like, we drove all the way down there, me and my one friend. It cost us $45 to get in there. We literally got one half of a lobster tail each, and they stopped it. Like, I was at the front of the counter or by the counter, and they looked at my friend.
Oh, I thought you got stopped because you ate too much.
No. Well, what it was is we got in there, and then I was near where the lobster was, and I could hear the chefs. They're like, oh my God, look at that guy. Cause my friend, you know, he's a big guy. He's pretty large and in charge. And, I guess somebody earlier ate like 8 or 9 lobster tails and like overboard, and they just cut it off at that point because I guess they were losing money. And so we only got a half a lobster tails. And as a consolation prize, they gave us,
your $40 fucking dollars back.
No, they gave us some calamari, fried calamari. And my friend, he wasn't making a big deal. So we were just like, whatever. Now thinking back about it, like we should have raised the fucking fit, but yeah. You know. It's one of those things that you look back like, well, what I actually wanted to write a letter back, but I was like, yeah, you know, at this point, it's 4 years after
a strongly worded letter is usually pretty effective.
They figured your friend was fat and he wouldn't have the energy to write a letter. It's really fat guys don't even have the energy to complain. It's like, oh, what, is there a problem? Whatever. I'll just get McDonald's drive-thru on the way home. It's fine.
Anyways, so it's on to magic-related matters. Congratulations to Ray Perez, for Wizards, you know, making the decision to make him the Rookie of the Year, as, you know, we were all happy to see. And that's, very nice to have him, be given that opportunity.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Wizards, for doing the right thing.
I think we can all agree it is the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like a real simple solution. And, I'm real happy at the way things turned out. Even if it hadn't been Ray, I think it's a no-brainer that the second place Rookie of the Year should, you know.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks that Fresnel, he was probably testing for maybe 5 days up to a week, you know, for this, and he had his hopes up, and, you know, it probably is sucky to him that he lost out, but.
He wasn't told anything official.
Yeah, exactly. And if I was in his shoes, then yes, I would want to be at Worlds, but, you know, I would also want the right thing to happen. So I don't think many people could be mad at this. There's some people that I've heard murmurs that this wasn't the right thing, but.
I mean, in his defense, he may not have been told anything official, but he was told, like, I mean, he was going off official.
Oh yeah, like, the rule was that it goes to the at-large.
It was the interpretation of how people read the rules, but actually the rules for what this was what occurred right. Was not actually written out.
And I agree with that, but I mean, there was an official Wizards representative who did say that the spot would go to him on Twitter. So, you know, in his defense, I can understand why he came to that conclusion.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe the best thing is to exercise caution in these type of communications that could be taken with this level of seriousness. But, you know, we're glad that Wizards came to it in relatively swiftness. It's going to be awesome to see Ray there at the Worlds, and you know, the way that he sounds, he's ready to crush this, hopefully, or at least, you know, he said two games above 50%, and he'll feel like he did well, so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he was expecting to go in and win the thing, but he's certainly going to put up a good fight. I mean, at this point,
expecting to get 12th at his first PT either, so.
No. I mean, and he'll definitely put up the fight. It's just a matter of, you know, things still got to roll your way. You're playing against 15 of the best players in the world besides yourself, so.
Yeah, and even then, like, look at Reed Duke on the first time Worlds. Like, he did horribly, and then he came back and went to second place. So, you know, a bad performance not necessarily mean it's, you know, the end of your game.
It's mixed format, so it's kind of a mixed bag. But Ray was saying that he does well in a mixed format environment, and I think his 12th at the first PT he went to bears that out, so. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to be glued to coverage. I hope the rest of the Brew Crew watches and, you know, just supports him. So congratulations, 2014 Rookie of the Year, Ray Perez Jr.
That's right. So when we get to Worlds, we're going to have there's going to be lots of fun formats to watch. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of Treasure Cruise in the older formats. But another deck may show up that I know Ryan wants to talk about, and that is this Jeskai Ascendancy / Heroic / whatever you want it to be / format dominating deck. So Ryan, I know you want to talk about this, so go ahead.
Wow, so Corbin, you just completely killed the only good segue I've ever come up with. So thanks for that. But anyway, I guess now that we're talking about the deck and I don't get to like gracefully segue into it later, the deck is awesome. It took pretty much one of the scariest things you can do with a combo deck, which is combo throughout the years has always had the ability to like pair with a control deck. And you know, you have things like Omnitel and stuff like that that have gone through different iterations. Like you can run counter spells, you can run a little more control elements, but a lot of times what the decks that can beat these combo decks can also beat the control deck, so it's not always like the best route. What's really scary is when you suddenly have a creature aggro deck that also just has the ability to late game from nowhere. It's not even like the deck has to have a lot of setup to do this, to just kill you. And that's really what, like, the fact that you have to deal with this very fast aggro deck and then on top of that have to worry about the combo the entire time. So you can't just sit back, control the board, you know, and just assume you're going to win it like you could versus the old Jeskai Ascendancy deck, like if you tore apart the pieces. Now, you know, like you don't get the option of waiting till turn 4 or turn 5 to do things. You have to deal with their turn 1 Acheron Crusader, their turn 2 Dragon Mantle to make a token. Like the deck can't kill you as fast as mono red necessarily without the right draws, but it can certainly get there a turn later.
It's pretty fast though. I played against it on Moto with the Abzan deck. I beat it, but it's fast. It can get there and you're just like, goodness. And then all of a sudden, oh, here comes Jeskai Ascendancy. We got the game for you. I like it. So have you played decks with it? Have you jammed anything with it? Or
I've been playing it on Moto a little bit. I need to play it some more before my article goes out tomorrow because I'm going to talk about it. But it's funny because like last week I had finally settled on the deck of Jeskai Ascendancy to play for myself. And I was like, I just need to come up with a good sideboard plan, some way to like, I was pretty much talking about a way to, you know, differentiate, like you need a way to win that isn't just this combo. And somebody did it for me this week. So I really don't have to do that much work, to get there. And I'm very excited about playing it more. The games I've done with it, it kind of really took the part out that I didn't like about playing the combo deck in the first place, which is the fact that every game you have to combo off and there's so many triggers. Now, I mean, you win probably a third of your games off of just getting there with creatures and or just playing a combo or an ascendancy and like triggering it two or three times and then you have enough to kill them anyway. So that really helps with the amount of, you know, games you can get in on Moto. And that definitely makes the deck a little more accessible, I think.
Yeah, anything that's like a bear to play on Moto actually ends up underrepresented. Like I know people were having a really hard time judging how good the modern version of it was because for a while there you couldn't wish for wear and tear, so people had no real way to deal with the ascendancy, so that they were getting bad testing data. So like people were, you know, timing out with the ascendancy deck, people were having trigger trouble, you know, Moto as a program right now, version 4, is eating a lot of memory, and like you need a pretty decent computer to run it sometimes. So there's just been a lot of issues where Moto is a little bit more to think about than just, oh, well, I get to play whenever I want. You know, I can have a tournament caliber game at any time of night, and that's useful. It's there are real considerations for Moto, so I'm glad that it's finally starting to work out a little bit.
So the question I think is this, and I mean, is this the new Boogeyman of Standard? Is this just a deck that people can deal with?
So it's not the Boogeyman of Standard, and I talked about this last night. What it does do, though, is it tells the people who are currently playing these very safe mid-range decks with carry tids and stuff like that, that you can't just do that anymore. Like, it really I think it's going to very much shape the format going forward, but I don't think it's going to be the best deck in the format. But it also keeps people honest. This deck is really... Jeskai Ascendancy's always kind of felt like Dredge to me in the first place, where like if you're prepared for it, you can beat it. But if you're not, sometimes you just get pantsed, and it even feels more so that way now. So, yeah, I'm excited to see where the deck goes.
So how's this appreciably different from the Jeskai, like, sort of Ascendancy combo deck that...
You have a backup plan, and your opponent doesn't just get to do nothing for the first three turns and still be able to stop you. Like, that's the big key before, is like, if they just did a timely Thoughtseize versus this deck, you know, that's another thing too. Thoughtseize doesn't hurt this deck nearly as much, because sometimes you're like, oh, thanks for taking two. Here's a guy, you're dead. And you just have multiple approaches. And anytime you can facilitate a good combo within a deck that can also run itself otherwise, it sets up for a pretty good, you know, a pretty good matchup. And I'm excited to see where this deck goes. And I think, honestly, as powerful as that card is, I wouldn't be surprised to see a more control variant come out as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see three different Jeskai Ascendancy decks.
I do like how this is shaking up the standard metagame. At this point, last year, we were just facing more tuned mono blue and mono devotion and Esper decks. So the fact that we're taking a Jeskai and you're seeing a transformation into this other deck that took down a SCG, this is wonderful.
I don't think that Standard really needed this deck to be very diverse. I think we were seeing a lot of deck diversity. What's it's not just, oh, are you playing, which deck are you playing, blue or black? Like, I think this has been one of the most diverse standards we've seen. And this is just another deck in that diverse standard, and I think that's great.
I agree there. I think the fact that we do have a combo deck in standard is very excellent. We haven't had one of those since Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
So, you know, every few years we should have this. I don't think, you know, it needs to be there all the time. And if it's going to be a dominant, at least a tier one, tier two deck for at least until the next set, can't be mad about that. But what we
can, indeed.
But what can be interesting for at least for Moto right now going on, Vintage Masters is coming back on Magic Online. Ooh. And this is relatively very soon after they supposedly ended it after the cons sets. Vintage Masters actually hasn't been doing very well financially online. In fact, a lot of the power you could pick up right now for cheaper than it has ever been. Maybe except for the Black Lotus. Black Lotus was a little bit back, I think, 150 at one point. But a lot of this is, I think, people are talking about as this actual demand of the format. Very few people are playing Vintage, even though Legacy is a lot more healthier. A lot less people are going into the Vintage route. And it's just the price of power is slowly declining. And now we got Vintage Masters that's going to be draftable with this new, they announced a Legacy Cube. Randy Buehler rehauled the entire Moto Cube, which was had a lot of loose cards there and not good stuff, and trimmed it up. And supposedly we're getting something called the Legacy Cube is going to be played with in addition to the Holiday Cube. And, with that, you're going to have Vintage Masters drafts going on, so that people can test for worlds and they have the availability of that, but you're going to see another hit of a lot of Magic Online cards. So this is another opportunity, another window for people. If you want to get in on Magic Online, Legacy or Vintage cards, like, you know, this is the window. So it's an opportunity for anybody out
there. Boom.
Bam. There you go. That goes right into my pick of the week.
It's time for the pick of the week.
Yeah, I think we should do pick of the week right now.
Well, perfect. Thank you, Jason. I'm glad you gave me permission for that.
Yeah, I'm driving this train.
So my pick of the week is going to be the Dual Lands again in Vintage Masters. And this is after that we start getting the Vintage Masters will be seen play and you start having the drafts going. Within the first week, I believe you'll see all the Dual Lands hit their absolute bottom they could possibly get and pick them up. You know, blue ones obviously are going to be more valuable than anything else, but I'm sure you can find value in some of the other dual lands. If you want to pick up one of each, or if you want to pick up a playset of each, I think if these are safe and over the course of the next year, you should at least double up, if not more, on many of these dual lands. Again, Vintage is not super played, but Legacy is alive and striving, and these cards are played in Legacy. And they, over the last time when they were available until now, they went up considerably. And sure, the supply has greatly increased because of Vintage Masters, but I think they're a safe bet and you have the opportunity to get in for the cheapest you can when these drafts are there.
Oh, so you're saying to wait. I was going to ask why you would buy before the draft started up.
Yeah, I would wait.
So you're going to see if they like hit a historic low with more supply introduced?
Correct. I think within a week after the drafts hit, within that window of the first week, you'll see a lot, you'll see the lowest price you can for those duels.
So you're saying to buy that first week or?
Correct.
And not wait to see if they go down lower because you think they could head back up?
I think people are going to be on the I want to buy dual lands hype trains.
Okay.
And so you'll have a window where it'll be right and then people will get in and I think they'll just rise up from there. Even though they haven't, like dual lands haven't done great since Vintage Masters ended, so like a lot of people were skeptical on dual lands because like they haven't went nowhere. But I think the time frame that people are expecting to get rid of them has been too short. I think over the course of several months after the supply is gone, that people need these dual lands and their demand will go up.
Okay, my pick of the week actually has a bit of a finance tip. This is not something we really wanted to discuss at length, but I think today the Commander 2014 product's available. I have seen a lot of, new finance writers online saying, hey, you should pick up the red deck because its total value is about $50 to $70 right now, depending on how you add up the singles in the deck. And that's, you know, that's a great flip. You can pick these up for MSRP and there's $70 worth of cards. I think that's a pretty horrible idea. I don't see an analog to Mindseize last time, because we're looking at cobbling together the value from a bunch of cards. Last time we saw, there was a $50 card in a $35 deck that everybody needed four of for Eternal Weekend, you know, within 24 hours. We're not seeing that mad scramble this time around. I don't think that you want to pick up the red deck unless you want to play with it, because that's the one I'm most excited about. And my pick of the week is Trash for Treasure, a card that is not in that deck, but that is really enables red artifact-based strategies. So when they spoiled Felden, I was like, you know what? I really like the idea of a deck that could run Felden or Bosch or what's the guy? Kirkesh. Yeah. It could run any of those three generals. And I was, you know, I got brewing on a red EDH deck. And then they announced the entire red deck, and it's really, really artifact-based. We're seeing Wormcoil Engine in there, so Wormcoil Engine's about to be affordable, so that'll be good. If you have any of those tokens, you know, there could be increased demand for that, because people that couldn't afford Wormcoil Engine at $25 will be able to, you know, buy a $30 deck that's got it in it, or, you know, pay $10 for it. So that's good. I think a lot of people are going to run artifact-based decks that didn't really have the impetus before, because the red EDH deck has just so much gas for that. I think Trash for Treasure kind of is a Goblin Welder card. It kind of does the same thing as Duretti and Goblin Welder. And I think that's going to be a staple in those decks. So that's something that's got upside. It's, you know, it isn't uncommon, but it is from an older set. So I think there's real upside, because that could be a staple in those sort of strategies. So that is my pick of the week.
It was a rare in older sets, right?
It was a rare in Meriden.
That's right. Yeah, it was a rare.
Well, there you go. It's even better.
I don't know why I said it was uncommon.
Cool. Well, yeah, what I like about those decks, and you know, you touched on it with Trash for Treasure, is that it gives red a strong identity in Commander, you know, to be based around artifacts and in the graveyard and kind of things that have always been around red or referenced on some older cards, but never really pushed like this. So I thought that was a pretty cool development.
Yeah, they kind of tried, like people have been playing Bosch, people, you know, a few people built around Kirkesh, but I like that it's explicit, and I like that new players will get that, cause red is the consensus worst color in EDH, and it has the best, Commander 2014 deck. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. I'll jump in next. Sticking with red, different format this time. I want to talk about Forked Bolt. You know, we've talked some about Treasure Cruise taking over the Eternal formats, and it's, you know, absolutely huge in Modern and huge in Legacy now as well. And the foils last week went up to $20. Forked Bolt is an uncommon from Rise of the Eldrazi, which is one of those sets that was only opened, for 3 months several years ago. Not a ton out there. And recently the price has started to move on it. And even more so than that, the number of copies available, you know, went from several hundred a couple weeks ago to now, there are about 30 people selling some number of them on TCG Player, which is not a lot. You know, and we've seen $5 plus uncommons. I don't know that this will get there, but this seems like it will surely go from the 50, 75 cents are available now to at least, you know, $2 or $3, because both in the blue red modern or the blue red Delver decks that are good in Legacy and Modern right now, this card is very good against them. It's very good in them. It's very good in the mirror. You know, it's a sorcery speed, divide two damage between creatures and players. If against one creature, against like a Delver, it's a little worse than something like Magma Spray or Pillar of Flame that's gotten played in its place, because it doesn't exile it. But when you start including the other creatures that those decks run, like Young Pyromancer and Snapcaster, this has the ability to more efficiently split your damage. You can take out a token with it. You can take out a Pyromancer and a Snapcaster, unflip Delver and something. You can still play it on that Delver on turn one, except you get the benefit of going to the face with it a little bit. It's both very good in those decks and against those decks. At one mana and, you know, 50 to 75 cents, third set uncommon, I think there's a lot to like here.
Right now, it's below its historic high, which was established when it was basically like Canadian Thresh's answer to Maverick decks. When Maverick was running around, this was, you know, an insane utilitarian card. It was brought in out of the board, you know, for the Delver mirrors and for that sort of matchup. It's fallen out of favor a little bit just because there's less oh, I gotta kill a mana dork and a Mother of Runes on turn two, or like, you know, I'm dead. So it could get back to where it was, you know, price wise. So we've already seen it go for more than it does now. So there's absolute upside. You know, if it was worth more 2 years ago, like how much could it potentially be worth 2 years later when, you know, we're further from the printing? So
where,
I think
where did it get 2 years ago, Jason?
You know, the data is, I just remember it being like a couple of bucks. I don't like all the sites that track that don't really have data that goes back that far.
Right.
Well, shot up on Moto. It was right after cons up to the, like 2 weeks ago, it was like 10 cents on Moto, and now it's $2.25 for just the regular copies. Foil copies in paper are $20.
Yeah. And that's a recent development in the past, by the time this cast comes out, the past 2 weeks, but really the past 10 days or so. You know, the ship has certainly sailed on the foils, but the non-foil still available under a dollar, I don't think will last long. You know, everything's subject to change when/if Treasure Cruise gets banned in a few months, but I'm pretty confident we're going to see a spike in this card before then.
It's going to get banned, but moving on. What about you, Ryan? What's your pick of the week?
So my pick of the week this week, actually, because I've been so obsessed with this mid-range or this Ascendancy deck, has to probably be Spirit of the Labyrinth. I think it's a card that people have really just kind of overlooked as standard playable because they're looking at so many other formats. And I think it's a fine card right now to just kind of negate. It's not great against a lot of matchups, but it's better than a lot of the options you're playing right now. And it's kind of a good catch-all. It definitely does wonders versus the Ascendancy deck. It's not something I want to see my opponent play because I have to have two Retraction Helixes most of the time to go off at that point. There's just a number of things that it makes a lot of decks kind of go, oh, well, that's a pain. I have to take care of that before I can do this other thing. And I think that's the way that you're going to build an aggro deck or any sort of mid-range deck at this point to be able to beat these combo and control decks is to play a number of cards like this. So I would expect to see this see some more play, whether it be, you know, Mardu or a different Abzan deck or whatever it is. And I could see some of the decks that exist now even, you know, porting it into their sideboards, but I expect to see that see some more play over the next couple months, and it's already, you know, nearly bulk. So
this is a card, when it came out, you know, Born of the Gods, this thing was more than $5 when it first came out, because people look at it and just saw the interaction with Brainstorm, where you just shut down your opponent's Brainstorms, and we thought this would for sure go to Death and Taxes.
Yeah, this was our number two card of the entire set of Born of the Gods after Brimaz that we picked in our set review.
And this thing's bulk now, and it doesn't.
It's a dollar.
The card's still really good, right? Like, the foil is $10, kind of, I think, representing that older play. But yeah, this thing under a dollar, this just feels like one of those cards out of a second set, like this, that could just easily move quickly.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, Leonin Arbiter is a pretty good analog. That was a card that everyone's like, oh, this is insane against the things that people are trying to do. And then, you know, it just really crept up. Nobody really noticed. But, you know, Arbiter has demonstrated upside. I think there's a lot of, you know, Arbiter was not from a second set, I don't believe. So
no,
it's not the best analog, but I really think that it demonstrates similar upside. And actually, the fact that these cards got so cheap makes me a little less bullish on Containment Priest than I think a lot of people are.
Well, that's the new card in the Commander that if a creature wasn't cast and it's put into play, exile it. That basically shuts down everything people are doing in just about every format.
Yeah, it shuts down people show and telling, and you know, it shuts down people Deadeye Navigatoring.
So it shuts
or
down
Dredge.
Or yeah, Splinter, yeah. Splinter Twin, everything in Commander, Stoneforge. The card just shuts down everything.
Death and Taxes, no more Aether Vials. You got any kind of token strategy? That's not happening. Sorry. Oh.
That's the real question is.
Well, Kikijiki, right? So if you got
right.
Well, it's not a modern, so that's not going to stop that Pestermite. Right.
So the thing is, it stops a lot in Commander. The question is, can Death and Taxes play it? Because
Death and Taxes is going to play this. So
but Death and Taxes also plays Stoneforge, right? So is it
do anything to Stoneforge Mystic.
But Aether
does it not? Does it not stop the? Does it not stop the Germ token?
It's a non-token. It says non-token creature enter the battlefield.
Yeah, I'm bad at reading.
Yes, you are. But yeah, but they have Aether Vial that they play a four of in that deck, and this will stop Aether Vial from being functional, which can hurt it. But at the same time, if you're playing against those decks that you're talking about, like an Oath deck, or you're playing a Show and Tell or something like that, like it doesn't matter that you shut down.
In my head, I totally missed the non-token, so it's still very good.
Well, I mean, it's not as insane. Good against Splinter Twin and...
Right, it's not as good as those things. I actually thought it stopped.
But Splinter Twin's not in Legacy, it's a modern...
Right, yeah, I was thinking just all of those sort of shenanigans in Commander, but it actually doesn't stop as many of them as I thought. But it is the perfect answer to your Show and Tell and your Aether Vial and Dredge graveyard decks.
It stops Deadeye Navigator, and that's really what people want a card to do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it sucks. I don't like seeing this card for what it's going to do for all these different decks, and it having Flash is just,
Feels like an answer. This feels like one of those cards, and it's interesting because, like, I see it in Commander, and I see how it's good in Commander. On the other hand, it's one of those cards I could pick up for Legacy play to bring in against Show and Tell, whatever, and it just, I thought they did not want to put any more of those cards into Commander decks.
I just don't think it's going to be as good. Like, people are talking dual caster mage too, being legacy playable. I think that's dumb.
It's interesting.
I really think people are like really trying to find a true name nemesis where there is none.
There is no true name nemesis, but Containment Priest and further along down the line, dual caster mage could be discussed as legacy playable. Not on the same level, but at the same time, I mean, true name nemesis was a $50 card. I can see Containment Priest being a $20 card.
Yeah, like, is Gaddock Teague a $20 card? Like, I really don't see it.
Well, this shuts down so many different strategies that are, like, the top tier strategies that, it just pulls their pants down.
I mean, I don't know if I agree on the price necessarily, but it certainly is something that can, be legacy playable. The biggest problem is it just doesn't have a deck, right?
Well, it's gotta be a Death and Taxes Cyborg card against Show and Tell, right? Cause that was one of the more tough matchups for that deck. So I think that it could fit in there. I mean, but that's probably it. Or maybe the Show and, like, maybe your white based Stoneforge decks cyborged in against Show and Tell or Dredge or some of this stuff, but I just don't know.
Deathblade or who knows? Maybe Maverick might make a comeback.
I guess what we're trying to say is Spirit of the Labyrinth is probably a pretty good pickup.
Yes. Yes. But no. There is a real point here with Containment Priests in that they are going to print as much of this product as people want. And that, by the looks of it, is going to be quite a bit. So there are going to be a lot out there. True Name Nemesis was when they were kind of experimenting with, you know, the printing to demand, and then one was so much more than all the others, and so on and so forth. These have a lot of value in them across the board.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be a lot of these Commander packs.
They're all pretty good, which is good, because they don't want that whole, you know, oh, only one of these decks are demanded by people and the rest of them suck. Like, the black one's a little weak and the blue one's a little weak, but they're all, you know, pretty good. And I don't think they're going to have an obvious that we need this as a legacy four of type card that sort of tanks values. Cause if you look at the sealed product values, like they're terrible. Like eBay has all the decks like $10 under MSRP a year on. And we didn't see that with the Commander 2011 stuff.
Right.
So, you know, cause if you look at something like Primal Vigor, which should not have gone down, you know, Primal Vigor is not a $4 card. So the fact that Primal Vigor is so cheap, it's like a lot of the singles that weren't True Name Nemesis, even in the other decks, are worth nothing, because how could Primal Vigor be worth $10 if it's in a deck that you can get for $18 on eBay?
Right.
Like, you know, eBay and that's sort of the outlet for the decks that retailers are just like, screw it, 30% off, you know, the Commander 13 stuff we have left, because we had to order so much of it to get the Mind Seizes people wanted. It sort of just tanked all the prices for everything. I don't really anticipate that happening again.
Yeah.
I think they did a better job this time around at making all the decks good. And I think the red deck should have the most value, because red is the worst color in EDH and it really needed the help.
I think that these decks are good too. Like, honestly, I can see they have enough answers in them that I can see them sitting down at a typical Commander table with zero changes made and being competitive.
They're playable decks, but Commander 13, like, those weren't too bad either.
I thought they were a little worse, but
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean comparatively, yeah, these decks are better comparatively. But I think the Commander 2013 stuff was
this
fine.
Is certainly like, gonna tank some values. Look at the green one. I was looking at the deck list for the green one today. It's like every uncommon or rare elf from Lorwyn block that you wanted to find in a box you were sorting through just got reprinted. Like every single one.
Yeah.
Down to the Hunting Triad. Like.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
It's a huge blowout on that stuff.
It's good for the players.
But you know what? The stuff that isn't in there, there's upside, because I think more people are going to build elf decks.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but so, like, there's not a whole lot that's not in there. They did a pretty good job of covering their bases with that
like
one.
Like I said, when I saw Hunting Triad, that's when I was just like, all right, I give up.
You got
even
me.
The stuff only I knew about. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, it's not even like it was super expensive, you know? It was just like, they just,
it was just
they
stuff
just
that
hit
was like,
everything.
Buy listed for 75 cents to a buck. And some of it was like randomly like buy listing for $2 or something like that. It was the blowouts.
Yeah. Anyways, Commander decks are pretty good. I'm actually looking forward to them.
So what about these new cards that we got from, Fate Reforged? We got two new preview cards that we got from the PAX Australia.
I'm already excited. Hybrid mana.
Yes.
I'm all in.
Yes.
All in. The only thing you could have done to make me happier about what you did with cons is to add hybrid mana. Like, it's actually just the entirety of Shadowmoor block all over again for me.
So what Brian is referring to is, there is a creature. Do we know somebody look it up. Tell me what the creature's name is.
It's
Yasova the Dragon Claw. This is a legendary creature, human warrior, 4/2 for 2 and a green. It has trample. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may pay 1 and a is it hybrid? And if you do, you gain control of target creature an opponent controls with power level less than the Dragon Claw. Dragon's Claw's power until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. So basically you could do a threatened on a creature that's smaller than it. Anything that's 3
Which
power
is not,
or less.
I don't know how good this is in standard, but this is a this is a general.
Good.
This is an EDH general because of the Memnarch rule. This is actually playable in a rug deck. You don't have to play this in mono green. So people are already talking about if you build a Voldron deck with this as your general, and you know, you boost its power and toughness by, you know, Voltroning. You can steal their blockers. You can steal their creatures. It's, you know, and attack with them. Like, it's
the one thing that we need to clear. It's not hybrid. Is it? It's hybrid. Is it Simic?
No, it's hybrid. Is it?
No.
It's hybrid. Is it?
I swear I'm looking at the picture.
Read it. It's hybrid. Is it?
Is it?
Go to Mythic Spoiler, read it.
I'm looking at the literal picture taken at PAX of the card.
I'm looking at it right now too, and it's a blue and a red. That's why.
And then a blue and a green, cause it's teamer. Right?
No, it's blue and a red. They're gonna give it hybrid, is gonna be the activation cost. That's what Aaron Forsythe is, that they're not gonna be having tricolor cards. The tricolor is gonna be in the activation cost of a lot of these cards. And this makes it a teamer card. Because it's going to be a green base, and you have the option of playing it with blue or red. And the last one is not a blue, and...
Alright, I believe you. I'm just blind.
It's alright. It's have a, you know, a broken clock would be right twice a day, which you...
I'm literally, like, looking at it, and I still think it's green, but you're right that everything says it's blue-red, so I guess I'm just blind.
No, I see. When I first saw it, it looked like it was green, too. It's a discoloration of the picture that's taken.
Yeah, you're right.
That's okay. I saw a picture that said Thoughtseize was missed. It looked like the expansion symbol was mythic. And I was like, oh, Thoughtseize is mythic in Theros. And everyone's like, no, it's not. So, you know, sometimes, what hope do you have of looking at a grainy cell phone pic from PAX?
Yeah, you're right. I guess so. It made sense because you thought it was teamer colors. Anyways.
Kind of sick though.
Moving on from me being dumb.
Well, it kind of sucks that the fact that, you know, we're losing 3 color cards in essence.
I don't think so though. It's very good for the draft format because it's like, because you're drafting this pack first now, it lets you kind of like, okay, I'm going to pick a bunch of red and green cards, and then going into pack 3, I actually have options open, you know.
But that's like the opposite of how you want to draft, right? Because you want to draft 2 enemy colors.
No, but this gives you the option to draft an enemy color because you could draft a green, but then its activation could be used just in blue.
Oh yeah, that's true. Just, yeah, you're
or
right.
Just red, or like, well, yeah, whatever you need it to be.
Gives you a little more, play with what works.
I think it makes it so you get to kind of break out of these shards too. Like you're not stuck just playing Abzan or just playing this. Like you can play the old shards because you have cards like this. Like there will definitely be draft decks that will pop up that are going to be like an Esper deck.
Come close.
This card I think is powerful enough to see standard play. I think it's that good.
I think it's powerful enough. I don't know that it's, I mean, does it have a good place? Does it have a deck that like really wants this effect? And I mean, I guess currently, I don't know that I would see this card seeing a lot of play. I think based on what the format is, I guess at the time, obviously it changes all that.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that we're not going to see the Zendikar Fetchland reprint in this next set. But
I kind of never thought that would happen.
I still think it is. I mean, it needs.
Do you think it's going to be in favor of Reforged, not Dragons of Tarkir?
No, it can't be in Dragons of Tarkir because, like, I think the idea of wanting to minimize when fetches are.
Well, that's what I said too. That's my argument why it was not neither of them. But if it's one of them, I think it would be in the third set.
Yeah, otherwise people aren't going to buy the third set.
I think you could have Filter Lands.
Oh, they're going to do something balling with the third set. They'll buy it because there'll be Eldrazi in it.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still drafting Fate Reforged with the third set.
Yeah.
So
the whole point of putting them in the third set would be to show that after having gone back in time and changed Tarkir, this is how it looks. And then it makes sense because you have the opposite fetch lands. But given the shuffling reasons, I still think that it's not going to happen, but I can certainly understand the other side of the argument.
I think it's a safe time to do it because you have so many other good lands. That fetch lands aren't seeing, I mean, they're seeing a lot of play, obviously, but it's like 4 or 8 protect. It's not like every land you play, like Legacy, is a fetch land.
Well, yeah,
about a card that actually is going to get printed.
Yeah, fair enough.
Cause I know Marcel wants to talk about the other card spoiled from packs.
the Crooks of Fate.
Well, that's
I bet it's
it.
Crux, cause that's a word.
Crux.
No, it's probably Crooks.
It's probably Crooks.
I like Crux.
Hey, Crooks, if it's Obzan, like it could be Crooks.
I mean,
it is Obzan.
Yeah, so anything's possible.
If I pronounce it, it's usually wrong, so let's go with the opposite of that. So this is 3 and black for sorcery. You got options here. You get to choose one. You can either destroy all dragon creatures or destroy all non-dragon creatures.
Spoilers, I bet there's some dragons.
No, why?
You know, honestly, there might
spoilers
not be, right? They're
never reprinting Damnation, so shut up, everybody.
You have to have an answer to the Eldrazi. That's what the dragons are.
Well, they did announce the third set is what? Dragons of Tarkir?
Dragons of Tarkir. So maybe the dragons won't be until the third set, and this is just your clever
plant.
Throw ahead. Your plant, yeah.
Well, I mean, we already have standard dragons.
Well, this
it's
is
not like none of them exist. Stormbreath is a dragon.
Yeah.
This is true. But then you play with a blue red. You play this with your Stormbreath as the finisher.
Why not?
Some black in there.
Yeah, well, they're talking about
We've all said stupid shit tonight that I like. I just want to record the whole episode. Hey guys, buy trash for Traveler. It's uncommon.
Okay. The spike feed that they were actually talking about how, you know, like, blue black control were a few cards away from it being a tier one deck. And here you go. You got a sweeper card.
I think it helps.
That considerably helps, especially if they get a dragon that could fit into that deck because Pearl Blank Ancient is not going to be able to fit that.
I mean, this is not that doesn't necessarily like you want this card, because Perilous Vault was sometimes too slow. Although functionally you can do them at the same time, but this allows you to use a little less mana. I mean, the Wrath and White cost 5 mana now.
Yes.
So you now have a black Wrath-ish that costs 5 mana, and it just clears the way for your Pearl Lake.
Wraths are gonna be 5 mana. That's the new
standard.
That's what it is, I think.
I'm not even mad about it.
Yeah, it's not horrible. I mean, cause you would just have such trauma. Like, oh man, I'm putting all these creatures on the board on turn 3 is just so I can get it wiped away. Like, you know, I think that, you know, at least for a little while that they're going to do this.
Well, it forces the control decks to not just lean on it as much as they would in the past.
True.
You know, so that's just to kind of, you actually can get aggroed out before you wrath, which is something people just, a lot of, it's been that way for Magic for so long where it just wasn't possible. They just always had the wrath that you didn't consider it. And like Naya Blitz a couple years ago was the first deck that could actually kill before you wrathed. So I think that standard is probably a little healthier when the control decks can't jam for Wrath of God or for Supreme Verdict and just immediately have their aggro matchup at least in a decent place.
That's fair. And we'll see. We'll see how this unfolds. I like how it sounds. I like that we got Ugin coming back. Is Ryan going to be right? Is he yes. going to, are we going to all have to buy him Fogo?
Ugin's going
to
be a legendary dragon. It will not be an Eldrazi, and Ryan's just going to be a legendary
Eldrazi dragon.
Eldrazi dragon. You've heard
Eldrazi
it.
Eldrazi dragon.
Heard it here because Eldrazi weren't powerful enough. They needed wings.
You don't know. He's the godfather of dragons and the godfather of Eldrazi. Maybe he created it all.
Maybe dragons are Eldrazi, Ryan.
That's possible. I don't know. Maybe the Eldrazi are the fallen souls of dragons.
Maybe Sarkhan Vol is an Eldrazi.
I don't think Sarkhan Vol is an Eldrazi. Quit being ridiculous. Corbin, sometimes you take shit way too far, man.
Wow.
Speaking of taking shit too far, let's read some emails.
Oh my gosh. Oh man.
Boom, okay. Turn that one around.
Hold on. Can I nominate that for the best segue of the year?
That was Marcel caliber. I thought you'd be proud.
I was just trying
sometimes
to get Ryan
some
trolling
right.
back.
Yeah, and then all you right. got trolled hard. Suck it.
All right. Let's take our first one. All right. Let's take the first email here from Ross, quotations, mittens, kittens, in quotations.
I already don't want to read this.
Mittens. Yeah, that was hard to pronounce, right? All right. He says, hey, Brew Crew, even as a person that doesn't have much interest in the finance side of things, I really enjoy your podcast because of your chemistry with each other, your banter, and your actual informed knowledge on the finance side of things, and your love for all things Chromanicore. That was probably directed at you, Jason. Anyway, on to the real reason I'm here. I have a couple questions I would like answered. Ordered into order that I would like them answered. If you're going to stop me taking the piss.
Hold on.
Trying to get multiple. What?
He's telling us how it's going to be ordered and how we're going to answer it. All right.
Well, I'm just trying to get. He says Vanderzee.
Next letter. you're fired.
I was just trying to get. If you're going to stop me taking the piss and trying to get multiple answers. All right.
I don't know what that means.
I'm just gonna read your question.
Taking Here's the piss is an English idiom. That
no,
means.
I don't want to do this. This guy doesn't get his question read.
I'm answering his question.
Why?
All right, he says, how would you guys approach cards that could be reprinted in upcoming products that you, you know, quote, need to make your decks, but are worried about losing a ton of money not waiting? But on the flip side, losing money because they don't get reprinted in them going up. He says, I'm trying to build a blue-red modern deck because I feel it's a deck I can pilot the best and be the most comfortable with. And the fact I get to play Treasure Cruise is pretty fucking baller, and I still like the deck before Cruise, so a Cruise ban doesn't affect my love for the deck. However, this gets me to the meat of my question. How do you deal with cards you need for the deck but are worried about getting reprinted? For example, Scalding Tarn, Remand, Snapcaster Mage, Sheer Visions. So I think what the question boils down to is, you know, assuming Modern Masters 2 happens in the summer, it's likely that we'll either get Scalding Tarn before then or in there, and we'll almost certainly have Serum Visions and probably Remand a Snapcaster reprinted as well. So should he buy those cards now for his deck and just be aware that he's going to lose value, or should he hold off, you know, 9 months until the summer when he could open those cards in packs?
It depends.
If you get to play the deck 20 times in the meantime and you lose, like, $2 on Serum Visions, like, who cares? You know, it's really – if you're going to lose – $20 on each copy of Scalding Tarn, you're going to play the deck twice. Sometimes you lose money, you know, like, but
it's a hobby.
It's a hobby, you know, but if you're really super duper worried about it, just think about how much you're going to play and versus how much you could potentially lose. It's a value equation, but at the same time, like, just think about how much you'd accept losing, I suppose.
And everything's going to cost money. Like, if you buy a brand new video game, it's going to cost you, what, $70 now? It's for the price for new video games, $60. So, you know, that's just the price of admission to play with the game. And eventually, if you resell it, you might get $20 or there. So you're paying for the, you know, the fun of being able to play with this. And sure, Scalding Tarn is probably the one that's going to get hit the most. So maybe you might want to wait till Fate Reforged. Spoilers are completely announced. And then brace yourself for Modern Masters 2. And then still like a madman. Oh. But I mean, in the meantime, before those happen, you could be playing the deck the entire time and then sell, maybe a month before Modern Masters 2 or something.
And we're not in the business, though, of telling people, oh, well, you know, you're going to lose money. So here's what you should do. If Skull and Tarn gets reprinted, the old version is going to probably half in value, and the new version is going to be worth probably a quarter of what Skull and Tarn is right now. So you're probably going to lose 75% value on your Skull and Tarns. Well, I mean, you'll lose 50% essentially, but you'll pay, you know, four times what you would pay if you waited for and just bought the cheapest copy later. Like on a card like Serum Visions, that's not a big deal. So
I mean, I
just do some math. Think about how much value you'd potentially lose, and if that's an acceptable amount to you, then just buy all the cards now and play with them. But if you're only going to play two or three times, you know, don't take the risk, I think.
Serum Visions might be the biggest blow. That's a $7 common. And if it's a common in Modern Masters 2, it's going to be under a dollar. Like, I think that might but yeah, I mean, you're right in terms of overall cost.
Yeah.
Rather than percentage. So I think that the other way you can go about this to actually try to give you some practical advice here is if you're looking for them to play with, which as you said, you clearly are, and you're aware that the value is probably going to get tanked by a reprint anyways, go get those beat up copies, man. Go find the damaged copies of Serum Visions that you can get for $3 to put in your deck. And then when it gets reprinted and it's just a common and nobody cares about it anymore, you saved some money because it's not like you're going to get your money back out of them anyways.
But the one thing also to remember is that your Zendikar Scalding Tarns are going to hold, you know, right. they'll be worth more than the reprints.
Right. Yeah. So there you go. Here we go. One more question. I think this is a good one to include is he says, when is the best time to buy cons fetches to get them as cheap as possible? Real easy, I think, to hit this one who wants it.
Rotation.
No, January, February, right?
Yeah. Are we actually disagree on this? I'm with Marcel.
I'm with Marcel on this one.
You don't have to wait forever. That's sort of, you know, just our.
The way I look January, at it February. Is Shocklands didn't really see much of a drop at rotation, and their drop had started earlier than that. But at the same time, these have a little more, obviously, legacy demand. So I would expect that drop to pretty much, like you said, January, February, and not really go down from there. I think once, you know, people are well-versed in how Magic works now. This isn't the Wild Wild West 10 years ago where people didn't know what was going to happen at rotation and cards went all over the place. Like, it's pretty understood. If it's played in Legacy or played in Modern, it's going to hold some value, and I think people understand that coming up. So the price should be pretty well settled by that point.
Yeah, I've been telling people this for several years now, and people still didn't seem to get the memo. Shocklands behaved exactly like the Zendikar Fetchlands did. They dropped at the beginning of the summer to their lowest prices. They were even through rotation. They stayed perfectly still at rotation, and they started climbing afterwards. You look at Steam Vents, which is more expensive today than the day it rotated. That's the exact same way Zendikar Fetchlands behaved, and it's the exact same way Khan's Fetchlands are going to behave. Waiting until rotation on something that everybody knows you hold on to just is not always the cheapest. You get them in the spring or, you know, the January, February. That's going to be your cheapest time.
I mean, there's a possibility they do go down a little bit at rotation, but there's not enough that it's worth waiting.
I mean, yeah, we didn't see it with Zendikar Fetchlands. We didn't see it with Shocklands.
Hey, I want to piggyback off his first question, and we didn't talk about it. Is it going to be the dual deck, the Elspeth versus Kiora? And now you got, you know, Elspeth's a $30 card. What do you guys feel about that as terms of, you know, now it's going to be his buy listing for $10 and it was buy listing for $20. And it's the same thing like playability, you know, like do you hold on to the card? Do you worry about these reprints? Do you think this is bad for players or?
That's fine. New art on them, right?
I mean, I think, I don't know. I think maybe some players that bought the card, the ones that are going to lose the value off a reprint like this are people that bought the cards at like $50 because they needed one to play with. But like, who cares? $10-15 buying them at $50. They didn't care. So they're not going to care about this either. And they've been playing with them for months.
Dual decks are just a part of the format in finance. You know, like they happen every year. They hit planeswalkers. They tank them. Then you have alternate arts for the future, just the way it goes.
And it's almost too late for the, like, it's not like you're like, oh, I could buy Elspeth for $50 right when Theros comes out, but if I wait a year and a half, You know, I could get a copy and a $25 dual deck. So maybe I'll do that. No one, like, it's just not a thing. So who cares? Like, it's too late for anybody to get cheap Elspeth that didn't have them. So
players are going to play and players need to play.
So it's fine. All right. Kiora seemed like a weird choice.
Well, I mean, she was, I think, one that is not likely to be brought up again. You know, so it's kind of a unique chance because Kiora is not as prevalent as something like Jace or Johnny that shows up multiple places or even Elspeth. I mean, I also think they look at it as this was one of the harder planeswalkers to get in the format price-wise. You know, it's just one of the harder ones to find.
Why would those two even fight? That doesn't make any sense.
The real reason is a bag of money showed up on Wizard's doorstep. So they could get Kiora reprinted so we could sell more Kraken tokens.
Kraken tokens.
Well, if you look at the opposing options, right, it's probably a Johnny or Kiora to be in different colors. And I mean, but like a Johnny's white, so that probably just knocks it out of there.
A white green. Versus Heliod.
Right. So then, you know, then your Kiora.
Well, plus
kind of
a Johnny doesn't versus Elspeth doesn't really make sense flavor wise at all.
But Kiora does?
I mean, it. Sure.
They fought the gods.
Yeah, Elspeth's dead. Just for the record.
Yeah.
So, some team they were. Maybe that's why they're fighting.
Maybe.
There you go. You broke. Ooh. Look at Corbin. He's finding the real drama and magic.
He found the Eldrazi. That's what we're going to call that.
There we go.
Do we have another email to read?
We do. This one comes from JM from the Philippines. He says, "Hey guys, first of all, thank you very much for your efforts in giving us great and invaluable info on finance and speculation. And for the weekly entertainment / shout out / segues / included in your podcast." He says, "I live on the other side of the planet, so my Friday morning is always dedicated to listening to the crew. I just have a simple question as I'm planning to have my Theros block god collection, and I want to know what the estimated floor price is for most of them. I have some of them already and I'm ready to buy the remaining ones, but I want to know if they will be cheaper come rotation. If they're rares, I would definitely wait until rotation, but now I see some of them at $2 to $3 and I have a feeling they will never be as low as $1 mythics. Should I buy any and complete them? And also, how about Keranos? Cause this is the most expensive god." He says, "I'm lucky to have three of them from draft and wondering if I should sell them to maximize value and rebuy them later on." He says, "I'm quite a new player and a trader, so forgive me if it's a silly and simple question, but thank you for your time and the best." No, I actually think it's a pretty good question.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's an important kind of question. It's something that...
Because I think we might have split opinions on the Keranos maneuver, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Keranos is whether or not you want to play it safe or you want to take a little risk. But as far as the other gods go, I have to agree. I think we've all said this, and we at least all feel this way. These shouldn't be dollar mythics. None of these should be dollar mythics. Even Karametra and those down the road, none of these are dollar mythics. If there is any cycle of cards that is ever going to reflect the prices of what Legions did back in the day, it's going to be this god cycle again, in the sense that these are all going to be $5 to $10 cards down the road.
Yep.
Until they get reprinted a billion times. But
except for maybe Keranos, which I don't think will move that much down from where it's at.
Yeah, I see it being pretty stable. I mean, it's played in modern, but at the same time, I don't see it going outrageously high. So, like, I don't know if he wants to sell now. Like,
yeah, I don't know, like, how much downside there is. There, like, you know, there's with most of its play being in modern, the rotation won't affect it as much. However, like, I don't see it going up a ton. So I don't know. I think the maneuver may be worth trying.
It's a third set mythic, and it's about $16 on TCG Player. Now, of course, he's going to have some different numbers on the other side of the world from us, but it's a $16 mythic. The buy list is $9 to $10. So the question is, if he sells them now for $9 to $10, can he reacquire them come rotation at less than that?
Advocate buy listing them.
Well, that's his question is, should he get rid of them now and get back into them later? I mean, you could talk about trading and other ways of making that happen, but.
No, I certainly wouldn't, I wouldn't limit your upside by listing them. Certainly not.
Think they're good to trade away, Jason, is what you're saying?
I think there's potential for it to go down at rotation. And, you know, there's a non-zero chance of it going down at rotation. And I think the downside of doing it is pretty low. So if he's inclined, I'm not going to talk him out of it, but I'm not going to talk him into it either. I don't feel strongly enough about like potential upside to do it, but I don't feel strongly enough about potential downside to tell him not to. So whatever you're thinking about doing, it's probably fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of agree, just that I definitely don't think you need to pick them up now necessarily. Give it a few months, because in a few months, it's not going to be significantly more expensive. It's either going to be the same price, at which point you probably just pick them up, or it will be cheaper, and then you can kind of track that down and see where it goes. I mean,
but for the rest of them, I'd wait as long as you possibly can. You know, if they're $2 now, sure, but if they're like $3 or $4, I'd hang on and see what they do.
I don't think any of them are really going to go down. Not the inexpensive ones. The ones that are $2 and $3 right now are not going to be less.
So that's probably the, you know, this got to be the floor. $2 or $3 on stuff that's, you know, Krufix is a really good general. Like a lot of them are EDH playable. Like $2 or $3 has got to be the floor on those.
And worst case scenario with those Karanos is, say you held on to them and they go from $16 to $10. I don't necessarily see them going a lot lower than that. So, you know, you may quote unquote lose some money there by holding on to the ones you have, but you'd have the cards you wanted in the first place. So
unless you manage to make some moves with the money, you know, the money you picked up,
right,
outing them at $16 in value now, you know, there's an opportunity cost to having that $6 held up per copy.
Sure.
Time for another email.
This one comes to us from Michael Hamilton. He says, I'm fairly new to the cast, and this is my first write-in. Sorry ahead of time for a long email. No, Michael, this email is actually pretty short compared to some of them. He says, hey, guys, I've been into Magic since May of this year. My girlfriend and I discovered the game and have jumped in with both feet. Unfortunately, we struggle with affording all of the best cards in Standard. However, I was able to snag a couple Elspeths from a local shop for pretty cheap a few months back. I got them for $16 each, and now they've risen to nearly $25 on eBay. The new dual decks were just spoiled and include Elspeth. My question boils down to the following. How soon after a reprint is spoiled do you need to sell off the cards for profit? Do I need to dump or them immediately,
before,
or can I wait? He says, thank you guys for all that you do. I've been listening to the cast for a few weeks now, and I'm hooked. You guys are very helpful.
We're sorry. It's probably
We literally just got this email yesterday. So.
Yeah, but it's not coming out till Friday, which was still a week and a half too late.
Well, let's write this guy an email back probably right now.
Well, hold on. What about this? What do you think about a lot of people are going to be panic selling their Elspeths, and then people are going to realize they're going to
need You know what?
I would agree if Elspeth was as good as she was 6 months ago.
Yeah, well, I would say the answer is this. Trade them away, because the buy list plummet the day after that dual deck gets announced, you know. The retailers realize we probably don't need to pay this much for them. It's going to come down just because people know the reprint's coming. So if you're trying to buy list them, you have, you know, less than 24 hours. What you can still do is trade them away, at their current price, which will continue to drop, but it won't plummet, you know, from the time they announce to a week later. You know, it will slowly drop over a couple, you know, a period of several weeks or more. So I would say trade them away.
I tend to agree, but like honestly, if you're playing with them, I don't know. Picking them back up later, in trade when they come down could give you a chance to make some money with the difference. So that could be, you know, $20-25. That's if you're looking to pick up some standard playable stuff. That's significant. So I think really trading is your only recourse.
All right, so I'm going to go – we actually are just going to have to do a mailbag at some point. We have so many emails. But I'm going to go way back to find one here. Give me a second to find this good one.
Corbin thinking in real time right now.
Must be real good. You didn't put a star next to it to favorite it or anything like that. Even I know how to do that in emails. Come on, Corbin.
It's not WordPress. It's Google. Ryan knows how to do that.
I do. I'm Google proficient.
No, Google efficient, I think, is what you said.
I got an email here from IP Freely. He says...
Wow, we're at that level.
Thanks, Marcel. I found one. Don't worry. This one is from Nick Nash, and this is from March of this year. So, you know, that's only 7-8 months ago. But this is just a nice email that we didn't get to, and I would like to read it on air.
Now he doesn't listen anymore because
we didn't. Well, if people stop listening when we didn't read their email... we would not have a good track record because we simply get too many emails to include on the cast every week. They just pile up. But Nick Nash says, on March 29th, "Hey everyone, just wanted to do a quick email to help battle against any negative feedback you've been getting. I've always liked that listening to your cast feels a lot like hanging out with the hosts. I guess that I take this to be a characteristic of good podcasts in general. In any case, do what you want. I'll keep listening." So that refutes your assertion, Jason.
Am I the only one getting Dear Stan emails from Nick Nash?
Must be.
All right. The next one here. It says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. I've got a trade. I was wondering what side you'd like to be on." He says, "Four Ravnica Dark Confidants for four Mox Opals." He says he would be receiving the Dark Confidants for giving away four Mox Opals and a Verdant Catacombs. He also says, "Shut up, Corbin." He also says, "More generally, what do you think about trading into and out of modern staples, fetches, bobs, and to some extent moxes that are in such dire needs of reprints? Keep up the great work. Massive UK fan, Chris." So, and this one is also for March. So, you know, hope Chris made the right decision here. But Dark Confidants for Mox Opals.
I want the Mox Opal. Man, I don't know. It's so close. Just pick whatever card you want to play with.
Mox Opals are being reprinted in Modern Masters 2.
I mean,
could Dark Confidant. Like,
I don't know.
Key Confidant. I would go for the Confidant.
Man, just whatever. It's so close. Who cares? Just take whatever card you want to play with.
I think both of those.
His other question's the more interesting one.
Yeah, right. I think both of those cards, the Moxes and the Bobs, if they're reprinted, they're going to be reprinted at Mythic, and it probably won't change the price all that much. So honestly, you're probably the same. But yeah, his next question is, how dangerous is it to get into those cards? You know, to get into your Mox Opals or your Dark Confidants or your Tarmogoyfs that clearly need to be reprinted to bring the price down.
Well, they'd have to be a real aggressive reprint to even impact the price. You saw what Modern Masters 1 did to Dark Confidant. They printed it ugly. They printed an ugly Dark Confidant, and even that, like, has price parity with the old version. It's craziness. So, honestly, like, on principle, I want to say, you know, if you got modern stuff and you're looking for the best value, maybe get into stuff that's on the reserve list, but I don't think that matters that much.
I actually feel better about getting into those sort of mythic modern cards like Bob and Tarmogoyf and Opals than I do getting into the rare staples that are needed.
Like, you can, if you're looking to trade, like, that stuff's in high demand. So if you're looking to just constantly cycle through cards, you know, just pick up stuff that's, you know, more in demand. Like, you'll probably trade more Dark Confidants away than you will Underground Seas. That's just kind of how it works. Stuff that's in modern and legacy and vintage, like Dark Confidant, is, you know, you've got a real wide base of demand from different people. So, you know, to that extent, if you're looking to do a lot of trading, probably pick up the stuff that's got cross format applications. But if you're looking to stash value, I might go after the reserve list. But again, I mean, Bob is Bob and Opal is Opal, you know, it says Mox on it. So, it doesn't really actually matter a ton.
All right, so I got another email here from a Seymour Butts.
I knew that's where you were going.
Oh,
boy. I was just like, where could he go next? It's got to be Seymour Butts.
Are we getting jokes from the 1940s?
Hey, I love The Simpsons. The early ones were the best part.
I remember that Seymour Jokes movie from some movie with Keenan when he was like a child. You know, from Saturday Night Live.
When he was like some child vintage, and looked exactly like he does right now.
That's some like vintage child 90s jokes right there.
Yeah, was that from a Mighty Ducks movie?
I think the Seymour Butts was actually in Heavyweights.
Heavyweights? Now that's
you remember
a movie.
That movie.
Dinner's been canceled due to lack of hustle. Oh, I remember.
Wasn't he in the movie with Mike Crotch?
No, it's what? Mike Crotch. Stop I thought it was it. Mike Hunt. I don't know Mr. Raj.
Yeah, I've never heard that other version.
Alright.
Anyways.
We've got a Michael Hunt listening to us right now, I bet.
I've got a shout out.
Oh, shut up.
People like shout outs. Keep
Wait,
going.
I have a shout out too, so go ahead. Chris.
I don't usually do shout outs. However, I am going to give a shout out to Matthew Goodrich. I had some cards come through that I did not have time to look through. About 20,000 of them. I just threw them up on Craigslist, met up with Matthew, who bought them from me, and he said, you know, we're about to complete the deal. Shake hands. He says, on one condition, you have to give me a shout out on the podcast. So consider that debt paid, sir. Thank you for taking those off my hands and out of my house. It made my wife happy.
So where's our cut of that?
Yeah. I mean, what cut of the shout out would you like?
No, I don't want the cut of the shout out. I want the cut of the cars or the profits. Yeah.
That shout, like, your cast fame facilitated that deal. Therefore, you owe us recompense.
You are the diva. You're not the talent. So you got to pay the talent the majority of that.
Oh, I'm so happy that he's the diva now. And I get to keep my crown, too. I still get to be the talent.
How is Jason not the diva? Does anyone throw fits over stupider stuff than Jason?
Hey, I didn't make this up.
Oh my God. This was
decided on Tap and Sack, which I have to give my shout out to for letting me be on the podcast this week. I had a good time talking about be glad that I was on that podcast for anyone listening to this, because otherwise I would have been spending an hour talking about the Descendancy deck, which I did last night. But they decided it. It was not me. It was no one on this cast. You have to bring it up with them.
Hey, I second that one. So can all the eyes say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, the eyes have it. There we go. Corbin, you're now dubbed the diva.
That's just that title applies so perfectly to Jason. I feel like you're wasting a golden opportunity.
Jason's not that much diva. He's just angry and bitter and fucking broken. And
Jesus.
I mean,
wow. Well, maybe I didn't get the worst of it. Maybe I did not get the worst of it tonight.
you're not an angry, I'm bitter, broken man.
I accept all of that.
That's... AKA a comedian.
Exactly. Oh man, fist of shoe.
Yep, that sounds about right to me. Shit.
Marcel, sometimes you are like the old guy in Boondock.
In Boondock Saints.
It kills me. Like, I need to get you a goddamn book.
Well, if it fits the shoe. Don't cross the street if you can't get out of the kitchen.
Oh, all right. Well, hell. Hey, it's characteristic.
No, it's fine. I enjoy it. It's good, and it's good comedy.
It's the best part of the podcast.
We seriously, we need to get you a book or something.
What, the shoe fits? If he fits the shoe, it's the same thing, right?
No.
It's truly not.
Fool me twice if the shoe doesn't fit. Fool me once if the shoe fits.
His foot fits the shoe.
Marcel, in no understanding of the English language are those the same thing.
Hey, go, if you were to go and speak with Sander van der Zee and you said it fits the shoe, I bet he'd get exactly what we're talking about.
Great.
Right, Sander? Yeah, you got my back, Sander. Let him know.
He would say, actually in my country, we say the monkey fits the shoe. He never did tell us what that monkey idiom means, and that's bothered me.
What was the idiom?
He'll be in DC. Ask him then.
I don't even remember. Man, one of our fans remembers this.
It was a foreign idiom that we'll never understand. Something like taking a piss or whatever the one earlier was.
It's taking the piss. Taking the, like, we take the piss out of Corbin. We make fun of him and call him a tool.
I still remember the finger in the soup. That's probably the one that's the longest with me.
That was a
for
good
anyone
one.
At home listening who has no idea what we're talking about. A long time ago, before Sander van der Zee was a writer for our website and a Pro Tour competitor, like he will be in Washington D.C. next year, he would send us emails complete with Dutch idioms that we did not understand at all.
Finger to soup was being one of them. If you want to take a second and try to guess, what does the finger in the soup mean? It means you got a lid on a situation.
Which I still don't.
Is that what it meant, or did it? Was it like having a hand hand in the pie, a piece of the pie?
It means you understand what's going on, like you know what's going on because you got your finger in the soup, so you get to taste what's going on.
Yeah, so you like had a hand in everything.
No, you know what the ingredients are. You know. Oh man, see, we don't even know the idiom again. Oh shit, we gotta get corrected. You failed us, Corbin.
This is great.
I'm not idiom guy. I'm sorry.
Hey, didn't you have something stupid about like throwing spaghetti at a wall or what was your stupid
throwing spaghetti in your lap and eating it or something?
You don't even remember. Great.
But why should I? I'm sorry.
You remember how to order from B-Dubs. You can't remember the important
stuff. I order the same thing every time. It's easy.
Yeah. Can I have diarrhea, please?
You know, speaking of that, did you guys know, and I'm sure you assholes did.
Of diarrhea?
Registered CorbinHostler.com and it redirects the Buffalo Wild Wings website.
Yeah, I think that was Doug.
I bet that was Doug Lynn.
Oh my gosh. the lengths that people go.
It's not that hard. Why you didn't register it is beyond me.
Yeah, I guess how dumb am I?
I feel like Kelly Reed has registered like the domain of the name everyone he knows. Cause he definitely has JasonAlt.com and I don't know how I'm going to get that off of him.
Cyber squatting, bro.
He doesn't have mine because I bought mine a long time ago.
I might get a Lithuanian domain because Lithuania, web domains are really cheap. I could be JasonA.LT. That would be sweet.
That would be actually pretty clean. I think you should go for it. And there you go. Is this the end of the episode? I mean, this was a very horrible ending.
This was let's just re-record the whole thing.
It was a train wreck.
Say way less stupid shit.
We did say some dumb stuff.
Yeah. And most podcasts would be like, nope, we gotta record that. And we're like, let's just make fun of each other saying something stupid. let's undermine each other's credibility.
Hey man, that's how you know we're honest. When we're that's stupid, true. We're stupid yeah. on camera.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.